nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology. You can follow along with this presentation by going to nanohub.org and downloading the corresponding slides. Enjoy the show.
We've made it through the first week of 656, so it's all downhill from here. So actually, today it's the last of some review material, and then on Monday we'll dive into the real heart of the course. So the topic today is just density of states. Something you've seen before, but we can talk a little bit about it a little more. Okay. So remember, as we discussed, in K-space, the states are uniformly spaced. You know, very simple. Doesn't depend on band structure. Every material is the same. But if we map those K-states to energy, then it depends on the band structure, the E of K. And we'll have different kinds of densities of states, depending on whether we're 1D, 2D, or 3D. Now, just a thing we have to try to keep straight. I will try to keep the notation straight. You know, really, the number of states is proportional to the volume. The bigger the sample is, the more states there are in it. But we usually like to talk about density of states per unit volume, or per unit area in 2D, or per length in 1D, because we know everything scales that way. So if I'm careful, I'll remember that if I say D sub 3D, that means it's the density of states, you know, it's a number of states per EV of energy, per unit volume. If I don't do that, it means it's the total number of states. It'll scale with the volume. I'll try to be careful about that. Sometimes you might just have to figure it out from context. There was a question on, I think it was Wednesday, about the limits to these integrals. So let me just say a little bit about that. Remember, when we took this sum over all of the K states and we converted it to an integral, then in 3D we had an integral like this, and it's over all the K states in the Brillouin zone. Right? But then somewhere along the line, I sort of started putting limits on the integral and said, well, we can go from zero to infinity. And how does that happen? Well, it usually works for semiconductor problems, but it's worth just mentioning what we're doing. Let's say we have some band structure like this, goes all the way out to the edge of the Brillouin zone. So the important point to note is that the bandwidth, you know, the distance between the highest energy and the lowest energy is very large for electronic band structures. You know, electron volts or so. Right. So if I look at this Fermi function, which gives me the probability that those states are occupied, it depends on the energy of the state in relation to the Fermi energy. So it's hard to get the Fermi energy too much above the bottom of the conduction band. You dope it very heavily, or you apply a very big gate voltage. You can push it up a little bit into the band, but you can't get too far. So the Fermi energy is down somewhere here. And now, if you look at a state up here where the energy is way above the Fermi energy, it's got essentially zero probability of being occupied. So it doesn't matter. I can go from K equals zero, and I can go out to K equals infinity. It doesn't matter, because by the time I get a little ways out here, there's nothing else to the integral anyway. Okay. So we'll do that frequently. Now, I mention this because, you know, if you've looked in the notes that we'll start using on Monday, there's a chapter in those notes where we try to do phonon transport. So we show that the ideas that we are using here for electron transport, we can use to describe phonon transport, just as we're going to compute the electrical conductivity. We can compute the thermal conductivity of phonons. Phonons have a dispersion. You know, it's omega k instead of an E of k. Instead of a Fermi function, we have a Bose-Einstein occupation factor. But there's a very big difference. All of the mathematics looks identical, but there's one very big difference. These bandwidths of phonon dispersions tend to be on the order of kT. So it means all of the states across the entire Brillouin zone tend to be occupied. So we can't get by with things like this. It also means that it's very difficult for phonons. You can see for electrons, as long as we can approximate the bottom of the band by a parabola, then effective mass works pretty well. But for phonons, we need the E of K over the entire Brillouin zone. it makes it a lot harder. You know, you can't get a simple analytical answer for the thermal conductivity that's very close, because you need to know that full dispersion. Okay, so here are the topics. Just a few simple things, and we will dive into densities of states. So remember, you know, just as a review, what we're talking about, we talked about how we apply periodic boundary conditions that makes all of these states uniformly spaced by 2 pi over the normalization length that we're just doing our bookkeeping in. And then if we want to know how many states there are between E and E plus dE, we just map those K states up and find out how many are in the energy range. So we can talk about a density of states in energy, or we can talk about a density of states in K space. So if we want to actually compute this in 1D, let me just look at this positive K half, okay? So the total number of states in this range dE has to be equal to the corresponding number of states in this range dK, because they're the same states, right? So we just equate the two. So the number, it's the density of states in K space times the the length, the space that we're taking up in K space, multiply those two together, it gives us a total number. In 1D, I'm going to be interested in the density of states per unit length, so I'll divide by L. Okay, so we just plug numbers in, and we get the density of states is 1 over pi times dk. Now, I could write this as dk dE times dE. And then I can just equate d of E to 1 over pi dk dE. So that's what I have here. Now I need to know my dispersion, because how k and E depend will vary with dimension and material and everything. But remember, the slope of the energy band is what? Velocity. There's an h-bar in there. So this is actually 1 over h-bar times velocity. So this actually works for any band structure. In 1D, it's related to one density of states and energy is related to 1 over velocity. Now, before we go too further, I have to be careful, because in this energy dE, you know, what if the state is in this part of the Brillouin zone with a minus K? It's also got an energy in that same range, right? So when you're working this out in 1D, there's always this factor of 2 you have to be careful about. You know, we have to worry about those states too, so we add a factor of 2. This is the one-dimensional density of states. No assumption about band structure yet, right? Velocity is just 1 over h bar dE dK, whatever E of K is. We can figure that out. All right. Now, we could get more specific. We could do it for a parabolic band, and that would be pretty easy. So parabolic band, the energy is the bottom of the conduction band, right, plus the kinetic energy, which is just h bar squared k squared over 2m. Now we can compute the velocity, and the velocity looks like this: velocity of a classical particle, square root of 2 times the kinetic energy divided by mass. And we use that velocity in our expression, and we get a density of states in 1D that looks like that. Now we've assumed parabolic bands. And you can see it goes as 1 over the square root of the kinetic energy. Okay. Now, if I had, maybe I'm talking about a nanowire, right? So the electrons are free to move in one dimension. They're confined in the other two. The quantum confinement is going to give me a bunch of energy levels. And if it's confined in the x and y directions, then there'll be a bunch associated with confinement in the x and the y directions. So there'll be a bunch of those. But then it's free to move in the kx direction. So it'll have an E of K just in the direction that it's free to move, but the confinement has restricted the K in the other two directions to some discrete values. And it's just like for this particular band, the bottom of the conduction band has been moved by quantum confinement. You know, for this higher level one, it's just moved to a higher one. So each one has a density of states like this, but instead of the bottom of the conduction band, This is the bottom of the subband that I'm interested in. So this is the bottom of subband 1, 2, 3 or whatever. I've also inserted a valley degeneracy. So you always have to know something about the semiconductor. Remember, in bulk silicon, you have these 6 equivalent ellipsoids in the conduction band. You know, in every problem, you may have some energetically equivalent valleys. So you may have to multiply by a number there when you get all done. Okay, so this 1D density of states then, for the first subband, it just looks like this. It goes to infinity at the bottom of the band and then drops as 1 over the square root of kinetic energy. But I've got a density of states in the second band. The total density of states, I would just add these all up. So if I want the total density of states at this energy, I would add the density of states in subband 1 to the density of states in subband 2. Right? Now, if my Fermi energy is up here somewhere above E2, then I have to compute the electron density by integrating the density of states in subband 1, and I have to compute the electron density in subband 2, and I add them up, and I get the total electron density. Okay. Questions on 1D?
So, these subbands, are these, when you're, are these collapsed from the second Bruon zone, or are these generated due to the confinement?
These are generated due to the confinement. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, if you want to compute, if you want to know what E1 is, you have to solve Schrodinger's equation, and you have to decide what the boundary conditions are, whether the wave function goes to zero at the edge of the wire, or whether maybe there's a silicon dioxide layer there, and there's some penetration of the wave function in. And, so that requires a solution of the Schrodinger equation to find out what those energy levels are.
Yeah, when there is no confinement, you will get 1K corresponding to 1 energy. Here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, when I have, you know, when I have a 1D structure, the way we produce a 1D structure, like a nanowire, is we take a piece of silicon or whatever, and we etch it out, and we confine the electrons in 2 dimensions so they can only move in 1. So then there's no way around it. We're going to have this set of confined levels. Okay. Frequently, in the rest of the class, I'm going to assume that the Fermi level is down here and there's only 1 subband, and we're not going to make a big deal about the fact that there are, those other subbands are there. But if you actually work on a problem, you know, like if you want to look at the density of states in the channel of a MOSFET, there you're confined in 1 dimension. You're free to move in 2 dimensions, so you'll need a 2D density of states. But then you'll have a set of subbands due to that confinement in the direction normal to the channel. And frequently there are a few of those that are occupied, so you don't have to worry about that. Okay, so let's do 2D. All right. So good place to warm up. So we have our 2D density of states. So it's A over 2 pi squared times 2 for spin. DKX, DKY is the area in the 2D space. So basically that's just the area in a differential element in the 2D K space divided by the space that each state takes up, multiplied by 2 for spin. So if I take a little DK there, the easiest way to do that is in circular coordinates. So that little red circle there is 2 pi, the area of it is 2 pi K DK. So I simply take the space occupied in K space, I multiply by the number of states that are density of states in K space, by the area in K space, that's the total number of states. I divide by area because I'm usually interested in the density of states per unit area. Okay. And we end up with an expression like this. Just put the numbers in. Now, if I want to go further, it was nice in 1D because we could get a nice simple answer that didn't depend on band structure. It's can't quite do that in 2D. So to go further than this, you know, this is the exact answer, but if I want the density of states in energy, I have to convert to energy. So I have to assume a dispersion. Well, let's assume our parabolic dispersion. So I take my parabolic dispersion. I can just do a change of variables from KDK to energy. And we get this expression, which is probably familiar to you. So we have a 2D density of states. Now, in the end, we should remember we may have to add a valley degeneracy. Right? There may be a number of these energetically equivalent in the Brillouin zone. They all behave the same. We have to multiply by that as well. Okay, so that's the density of states in 2D. So it'd be the same kind of thing. If K parallel is, say, the XY direction in the plane of a MOSFET, and the gate field is confining you in the vertical direction, you know, close to the silicon-silicon dioxide interface, then the confinement is giving me a set of subbands. You know, that's maybe KZ. The electrons are free to move in the KX, KY plane. That's K parallel. So in the direction that they're free to move in, we assume that they behave like parabolic bands. And, you know, then we take our expression. We'll have to look at what the effective mass is in each of those subbands. So here it gets a little tricky. Maybe we'll talk about this a little. We probably will talk about this a little more later on in the class. Remember, in the bulk, we have these six equivalent ellipsoids, you know, in the X, Y, Z direction. We're talking about electrons. And when you average everything out, everything averages out. Right, everything is isotropic. But if you apply a confinement in one direction, you can see that these two are going to be squeezed in a certain way because the confinement direction is in the direction of the heavy effective mass. These four are going to be confined in a different direction, in a different way, because these ellipsoids have their light effective mass in the direction of confinement. So what we'll find, for example, is that the bottom one has a valley degeneracy of 2 because it comes from 2 of those 6 ellipsoids. The next one has a valley degeneracy of 4 because it comes from the other 4. So there are details like that that we have to worry about when we get to real problems. Okay, so again, our 2D density of states, we would have a constant density of states for subband 1. If the energy goes above the second quantized level, we have a constant density of states for that. They might not be equal because the valley degeneracy is 2 for the first subband and it's 4 for the second subband. All right, so just details that we have to be careful about when we work out problems. Okay, now here are some calculations. So I had a former student of mine do some calculations. I think he might have run these on the NanoHub. Now, we draw these pictures because, you know, when we do things analytically and assume parabolic bands, we can work everything out nice and simply. Density of states is constant or piecewise constant. We just add up all of the contributions from each subband. We get these nice staircase things. You know, what do they really look like? So here's the numerically calculated 2D density of states for a very thin silicon film. And you can see it sort of works. It's almost constant here. And then you go to the second one, and it's got a little bit of slope, but it looks roughly like what you would expect it to look like. Now, we're just looking very down at low energies, where the effective mass approximation, the parabolic bands, should be good, because you're down near the bottom where that curvature can be approximated by a parabola. If you go higher in energy, you know, maybe you're going to apply large voltages or high electric fields and the electrons are going to get far away from the bottom of the band. You know, then the density of states can be very complicated. You know, you see the first subband here, it's almost constant. You see the second one here, it's almost constant. And then you see all kinds of complicated stuff that just comes from numerically calculating the density of states in that complicated band structure. And if the electrons in your problem have energies up here, then you know, you can see it's going to be nonsense to try to use an effective mass description of that. Right? So it all always depends on the context about what you can get away with. Right? We try to get away with the simplest that we can, but not too simple. Right? Now, I think in the homework, I just have one homework problem for this lecture. And I think what I ask you to do is to take a non-parabolic band like this and derive the density of states. So there's a very common way that people use to first order describe the non-parabolicity. If you're still near the bottom of the band, what you'll frequently find is that the energy doesn't increase as fast as the parabolic expression says. And a way that people describe that is to say E times 1 plus alpha E is, this should be equal to H bar squared K parallel squared over 2M. Alpha is called the non-parabolicity factor. If alpha equals 0, this is just E is H bar squared K squared over 2M. But if it's finite, then it flattens out that dispersion a little bit. And you can derive the density of states for such a dispersion. All right. This is an equal sign here too. And you can compute the density of the states. I think that's the homework problem I ask you to do. And you'll find that instead of being flat, independent of energy, they have a little bit of a slope to them. That's where that slope comes from in the numerical calculations that we showed you. And you can kind of see that intuitively. You don't need to work it out to see what that is going to do. If this is my parabolic band structure, we just mapped these K states up, and then we found out how many were in the energy range of interest. If I've got a dispersion that's flatter, I'm mapping the same K states up, and you can see in a particular energy range, there's going to be a lot more of them there. It's going to increase the density of states in energy. Density of states in K space is constant all the time, but when I map it to energy, if I have a different dispersion, I get a different answer. So non-parabolicity generally increases the density of states. Okay, there's another way to do this that you should know about, so let me discuss this too. You will frequently see the density of states defined in this way. It's a sum over all the K states in the Brillouin zone of a delta function at the energy of interest minus the energy of that K state. You sum over all the Brillouin zone, divide by L, that'll give it to you in 1D. Similar expression in 2D, similar expression in 3D. Okay. So, you know, we can prove that that's the right answer. Because, for example, we know in 1D that if I want the electron density, I just sum over all the K states, multiply by the probability that each one of them is occupied. That gives me the total number of electrons in this region L that I'm doing my counting in, divide by L, and that gives me the density, number density per centimeter of the electrons. I could do this in energy space. This would be the same calculation. You weight the probability that the state is occupied times the number of states between E and E plus dE, do an integral over the entire band. You get the same answer. Okay. Now, if I insert that definition for the density of states in terms of these delta functions, then this is like two integrals. We're going to convert this sum to an integral anyway, right? And if the functions are well behaved, which they usually are, I can interchange the order of the integration. And if I interchange the order of the integration, I'll just bring the sum out front. Now I'm integrating f of e times this delta function. I'm only going to get a contribution to this integral when e is equal to ek. So I'll get an expression like this, and lo and behold, it's the expression we started with in k-space. So that definition of a density of states will give me the right electron density. And you can kind of see, if you want to know physically, you know, what is this? You know, what's happening here is that if I look at my density of states, and if I go along in energy and ask how many states are there, well, here I'll find there's one K state. Here I go, there's another K state. Here I go, there's another K state. So if I map these in energy, you know, they're just going to be distributed non-uniformly. But at each particular energy, every one of those K states has some particular energy. They're spaced very finely down at the bottom, If I look at energy there, they're spaced more widely when I go up at the top. But each state is only one. And then I multiply by two for spin when I'm all done. So if I want to know how many states there are between E and E plus DE, I just count the number of contributions I got there. And if you look at what we're doing here, when we integrate the density of states over energy and do this kind of integration, all we're doing here is, you know, if I want the total number of states between a specific energy E1 and E1 plus DE, I'll just integrate the density of states over that range. If I use this expression for my density of states and then interchange the order of the sum and the integral, you can see that what I'm doing here is I'm looking at every K state when the energy of that state is of that state is equal to the energy that I'm interested in, I'll get a 1. So we're summing over all of the K states, and we're basically just counting. I'll get a 1 every time the energy in this range between E1 and E1 plus DE, every time one of those K states has an energy in this range, I'll get a contribution from the delta function. So all we're doing in this definition of density of states is we're just picking an energy range and we're counting the number of states that are in that energy range. You know, that's what this definition means physically. All right. Okay. So to see how this all works, let's do graphene. We're going to do graphene. I'm going to go back and forth in this semester between graphene and parabolic semiconductors. So common semiconductors like silicon, germanium, gallium arsenide, we're mostly going to treat as parabolic band. But we'll do graphene just so that we have an example of something that's not parabolic. So you've probably heard graphene is a two-dimensional monolayer of carbon atoms bound in this hexagonal structure. And it has a really unusual band structure that people find very interesting. And people are exploring a lot of the interesting electronic properties of this material for potential applications. Now, you can calculate the band structure. It's not too difficult. If you've had Professor Dada's course, you've probably written a MATLAB script to do this. You could write a simple tight binding model, do the calculation. This is the 2D Brillouin zone. These are the constant energy surfaces. You can see that they meet at a specific number of points. There's actually, they meet at 6 points in this 2D Brillouin zone. If I look at this 2D Brillouin zone, those 6 points are the corners of this hexagon here. And it's interesting, if you look at the reciprocal lattice vector in this 2D space, you'll find that only 2 of these 6 points are independent. Because the red ones I can reach just by a reciprocal lattice vector, so they're not distinct. They're the same point, just at a different place in the Brillouin zone. The blue ones, also, I can reach the other blue ones by a reciprocal lattice vector. So what that means is that the valley degeneracy is 2. That's one of the things you have to know when you're dealing with a material. When I compute its band structure, how many equivalent valleys are there? Okay, we're going to be interested in intrinsic graphene. The Fermi level is right at the intersection of these points. So we're going to be interested in the band structure near the intersection of those points. So it might look like there are 6 of them, but there are really only 2 distinct ones. And if I just plot that band structure versus Ky and Kx in that plane, right near the point where the conduction and valence band intersect, they just look like cones. You know, so straight lines. This is a cone in the 2D space. Very simple band structure, but not at all parabolic. We call positive energies the conduction band and the negative energies the valence band, but there's no band gap. People call this a semi-metal. In a metal, usually the Fermi level is right in the middle of a band. Here, the Fermi level, unless we dope it or gate it or something, is right at the intersection point of those 2 bands. So there are no states there, just like a band gap. but it's an infinitesimally small energy range. So there's a very simple, as long as we stay near this regime, there's a very simple dispersion. The energy is just plus or minus h bar v sub f times k. So if you take the slope of this, you'll take 1 over h bar times dE dk, you'll get a velocity that's v sub f that's constant. So that's a little unusual. You know, for a parabolic band, the higher the energy, the faster the velocity, square root of 2e over m. In for electrons in graphene, no matter what their energy is, they travel at the same velocity. That's sort of like photons, right? So we have this very simple e of k. Velocity is constant. Turns out to be about 10 to the 8th centimeters per second. That's a pretty high value, about 10 times the saturated velocity in silicon. So that's another reason that people are interested in graphene. As I mentioned, we'll have to insert the Valley degeneracy of 2 when we compute density of the states. And that point, you know, if the Fermi level is right at that point, then I have equal numbers of empty states below, or holes, and filled states above, which are electrons. So that's called a neutral point. Sometimes it's called the Dirac point. So this is really all we need to know. If we know a band structure, we can compute a density of states. So, you know, if you'd like to understand a little more about where this band structure comes from and some more details, I'd point you to those lectures online from Professor Dada. But this is all we need in order to calculate the density of states. So let's start with that second method, the delta functions. We'll calculate the 2D density of states for graphene. We'll use our delta function definition. So we'll convert that sum over k in the xy plane to an integral over k in the xy plane. So we're integrating over k parallel, dkx, dky. There's a simple relation. It's not parabolic, but it's simple. You know, energy is proportional to k for electrons in graphene. So we can convert from an integral over k space to an integral over energy space. Just do a change of variables. And when you do that, we're only going to get a contribution at the energy that we're trying to compute the density of states for. So when we integrate over all of these, that's the only one that will come out. And we get a 2D density of states that has an expression like that. And I guess I've inserted my Valley degeneracy of 2 in there. Okay. And I was just doing it for positive energies here. There's also negative energies below the Dirac point where E is minus h bar vfk. So what I'll find is a density of states that is linearly proportional to energy in the conduction band and is also linearly proportional to energy in valence band. So the density of states is zero at the neutral point or the Dirac point. It increases linearly with energy in the conduction band. It increases linearly with energy as you go down in the valence band. Okay. So the point being, you know, this is, we had a 2D density of states for parabolic bands that was effective mass over pi h bar squared. All right. There's no effective mass here. But for parabolic bands, the 2D density of states was independent of energy. For graphene, it's proportional to energy. All right, so it's just a reflection of its band structure. You could get the same answer by doing it the first way we discussed. If I look in my 2D K space, it's this little shaded region. It's the area. I want to know how many states are in that area. So I take the area. I divide by the space that each K state takes up in the 2D plane. I multiply by 2 for spin, and I also have to multiply by Valley degeneracy, which turns out to be 2. So you do that calculation, and then you convert from K to energy, and lo and behold, we'll end up just going through that conversion from K to energy, and we'll get exactly the same expression. Okay. All right, so you can do it either way, whichever way works best for the problem at hand. Okay. So then there's just a couple more things I want to mention. So for parabolic bands, you know, we will frequently now in the rest of the course make use of these expressions in 1D, 2D, 3D. People frequently use versions of these that include that non-parabolicity parameter alpha, because if you get a little ways away from the bottom of the conduction band, it's not quite parabolic and you might have to do better. So you'll see expressions like these, and sometimes you'll see more complicated expressions that have that parameter alpha in. I ask you to work this one out for the homework. You can do it with the delta function approach, the method 2 I outlined, or you can do it with the first one. So we have these characteristic variations with energy. Okay. But, you know, remember, this is not, you know, graphene is a 2D material. The 2D density of states of graphene doesn't look anything like this. Right? So we have to keep that in mind. Now, here are some results a colleague of mine sent me last week. So just, you know, we're taking, you know, one final look at it. This is an actual density of states for silicon. So here's energy. The reference point was the top of the valence band, which is zero for this reference. Here's the band gap. I have to talk to him about that. I thought the band gap of silicon was 1.1 electron volts. 1.12, that looks a little bigger. But this is the conduction band. This is the valence band. You know, density of states is plotted up. So you can see that, you know, near the bottom, it might be looking almost parabolic. But just like those results I showed you for the thin silicon layer when we did it, if you go to higher energies, you get very complicated looking density of states. So here you're seeing additional bands that are coming into play at higher energies. And then you're going to the top of those bands, and then they drop out and the density of the states plummets. So when people do problems like, you know, looking at the reliability of a MOSFET, when you have very energetic electrons that might impact, ionize, or, you know, create reliability problems, you're dealing up here. And people are very careful about the density of the states up there. You wouldn't think of using a parabolic band, and you wouldn't even think about using this non-parabolic structure, because that might get you to, you know, an EV above the bottom of the band, but it won't get you to a few EV. You just have to do it numerically. And if we were to do it numerically, the way to do it would be to use this delta function definition. You know, this is basically how people do it. So we approximate the delta function with a little rectangular function, capital delta of E, you know, that is one. Now, if I want to compute the density of the states at some particular energy, then I'll define a numerical delta function that has some finite width, and I'll say, you know, it's the value is 1 over delta E whenever the energy falls in that regime. And then I'll just do that sum. So I'll have this big band structure calculation that will divide up the whole Brillouin zone into a bunch of cubes, kx, ky, kz. I'll have a big long numerical table. I'll go through every point in K space and I'll say, you know, does it fit within this delta function? If it does, I've got one state in that energy range. And you'll go through all of them in the entire Brillouin zone. Every time I find one in that energy range, I'll add a state to it. And I'll just find the total number of states anywhere in the Brillouin zone that happen to have that energy. And that will be the total number of states. Not quite, because when you do this band structure calculation, you'll have a little chunk of K-space that has some finite volume. And in that finite volume, we know that there isn't just one state. You know, there's a finite number of states. So we have to divide that volume by the density of states in 3D, which is 2 pi cubed over omega, and multiply by 2 for spin. So every time I go through my numerical table and find a state that's in the energy range I'm trying to find the density of the number of states for, I have to realize that I had some finite size to that little cube, and there are really a bunch of states there. And I just compute the number that way. Okay, so over the years, people have worked on, you know, this is a crude way, and you can get something that's rough and close this way. You might have to use a really fine grid in K-space to get reasonably smooth answers. So there's a lot of work that people have done on, you know, more sophisticated numerical algorithms that try to give you accurate answers and smooth answers with a relatively small resolution in K-space. Now, if we blow up this regime, because this is the part that we're going to be mostly interested in, at least for the first third of the course, it'll look something like this. So here's the conduction band. Now, this is kind of interesting because you can see that doesn't quite look parabolic. You know, we're used to using an effective mass for silicon, and we hardly even think about it. But if you look carefully, it, you know, it's not going as a square root of energy. It's going almost as a square root of energy. But this solid line here, he did a fit, but he didn't fit to a parabolic band. He used that expression that I showed earlier to fit to a non-parabolic band, and he got a pretty good fit. But then there's a distinct kick up at an energy that's 0.12 eV above the bottom of the conduction band. And that's because there's another band in silicon that's 0.12 eV above the bottom of those six ellipsoids. And if you just give the electrons a little bit of energy, you could occupy those. And he's fit that additional band with a density of states that has a non-parabolicity. So it looks like here, that one he could fit with a parabolic band because the non-parabolicity parameter was zero. You can see both of those have a valley degeneracy of six. You know, comes from the symmetry of the Brillouin zone. So there are problems. You know, it all depends on what kind of accuracy are you looking for? How sensitive are you to the details of the densities of the states? Your particular problem might tell you you can't use just the normal effective mass for silicon. You have to be more careful or something like this. And this is the same thing for the valence band. And again, he's able to fit, you know, you can see the numerical error. You know, you have a finite number of cubes in K-space when you do the band structure calculation. So, you know, the noise we're seeing there is numerical noise. But he can fit that with his smooth line. And both of them are non-parabolic. You know, the first band is probably the heavy hole band. The second band is the split-off band, which I think is 0.25. The split-off band is a little bit below the top of the valence band. So you're able to do that. So you were asking about approximate expressions. You know, sometimes people go to a lot of effort to try to fit these numerical curves very accurately. Right? If you have to do it, you just roll up your sleeves and do it. Right? Now you can see that if you really need to worry about details down here near the bottom of the band, even this numerical noise is an issue. You'd probably rather deal with the analytical fit that's smoother. Okay, I think that's about it. So, you know, if you've followed this material in the previous two lectures, then we're ready to dive into the course. You know, when we're computing carrier densities, we're going to need the density of states and use it frequently. We're going to find out very quickly, probably on Monday, that when you compute current density, this isn't enough. We need something else. But the important points you want to take away is that density of states depends on what dimension we're working in and what the band structure of the material is. If we have analytical expressions for the band structures, then we can develop analytical expressions for the density of states in energy. If we don't, we just have a table of E of K and we compute a numerical density of states, and people do it both ways. Okay, any questions? Yeah.
28, when you'll be showing it.
Let's see, slide 28, do you have a question about? Yeah.
Between red and the black ones, mm-hmm. The black lines are the analytical one and the red one is?
The red one is just a numerical curve, right? From the full band calculation. And you know, this business you're seeing here is most likely just numerical error due to doing that calculation.
And I do understand the role of these two different effective bands.
Well, they're actually two different, you know, when you look at these, at this conduction band of silicon, you know, what we like to talk, we have an E and we plot it in the, is this the 100 direction? And there is a minimum valley that's something like 85% of the way out to the edge of the Brillouin zone, right? And there, so all of these have a minimum that's 85% out of the edge of the Brillouin zone. There's actually another band out here that is 0.12 EV above. Okay. So if your energy, so these are the six ellipsoids you're used to seeing. Okay. But if you get just 0.12 EV above the bottom of those six ellipsoids, there's another six valleys. And it doesn't take a very big electric field to give the electrons that much energy, and they could be populating those. Mm-hmm. Yes?
For the 1D density of states, assuming parabolic bands, how do you solve the problem of singularity if you have an electron right next to the energy?
Well,
come up with a number for that.
Yeah, so yeah, what do you do about that infinity there? So usually, you know, when you do integrals like this, I think that you know, the integral under the area under that curve will be finite. You won't have any problem in doing those integrals. Now, you know, and it just comes from this way that we've mapped the states, you know, that if I can look back here on, let's see, one of these slides. Yeah. Now, it just comes from this mapping that when you get down here infinitesimally close to the place where it has zero slope, the states start getting packed very tightly. Now, this can be a big problem when you do numerical calculations. You know, people worry about this a lot when you're doing numerical calculations. Analytically, the area under the curve is finite. Yeah. If you want to know the number of states between E and E plus DE, you'd have to be careful. Now, you know, if you're trying to do this, like say on MATLAB, and you're trying to do a trapezoidal integration, this could give you big problems, right? Because, I mean, then you're just depending on how close, how small your final trapezoid is, how close you are. You know, people who do numerical integrations worry a lot about these kind of problems. Usually there's a way to reformulate the problem so you can remove that singularity, you know? Yes. But it can be a problem numerically. Yeah.
I just had one quick question on slide 27. You showed above MDOS and when we talk about the energy window, delta E, where we sum up the individual DOS peaks. So I'm just wondering if there's a formalism how we can make a good guess of how big this E should be, because I guess if you choose it too small or too big, it would have a pronounced effect on the height of the peaks.
Yeah, you know, there's a whole, so the question is, you know, if you actually have to do this calculation, you know, how do you do that? And, you know, this is something that people have worked on for 30 or 40 years. You know, there's a lot of papers on various different numerical algorithms in order to do this well, right? If you need to know this, I can point you to a standard reference. It has some really long name that I don't recall. But I mean, there's a whole literature and number of papers about how you choose the width of these, how you do the integration, you know, so that you get smooth results. Yeah. The brute force way is just make the cubes very, very small, but then the calculation of the band structure takes forever. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll dive into the course then on Monday.